Well, can I just quickly say thank you to all our musicians and singers and for you as a congregation. Well done. You're in good voice. And there's some very good, there's some youngsters around who have been very well behaved. Good on you. And remain good for the next few minutes. If it gets too dreadful, don't worry. I won't be offended if you go for a runner. But there have been a lot of great sporting contests are happening over the Christmas period. The England cricket team are in the middle of a test series in India. In a 10-day period over Christmas, all the Premiership football sides will have played 3 matches. And I thought that I had a busy Christmas. And next Saturday, I shall hopefully watch Harlequins trounce Leicester at Twickenham. But the greatest contest fought over every Christmas takes place not on the sports field, but in the charts. Which song will be the Christmas number one? It's a contest that's been going on for many years now. It used to be decided, it's an extraordinary fact, it used to be decided by the sale of sheet music. But in 1952, it was decided for the first time by record sales, when Al Martino won singing Here in My Heart. I just wonder, can anybody remember that song? Yeah, there are a couple of hands have gone up. Well done. I couldn't even remember the one which won it last year without looking it up. It was Leon Jackson singing When You Believe. And that's so often the case. On certain radio stations, there's all the great hype over who will be the next Christmas number one. But just as quickly, the songs kind of fade into obscurity as they kind of rose into prominence. Yet here we have gathered this evening to sing the same old favourite carols once again. And even though some of them are literally hundreds of years old, they haven't lost their appeal. They've lasted because they were written to celebrate timeless truths, truths that are summed up by one verse from the last reading we had from John's Gospel. It's written out for you on the sheet. Just have a look at it with me. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. The Apostle John in his Gospel doesn't recount the actual events that surrounded Jesus' birth, as Luke does, which we've been hearing tonight in our readings. There's no mention of Caesar Augustus and the other names and dates that anchor Jesus' birth in history. There's no mention of the angel appearing to Mary, no details about the birth, no mention of the shepherds or even the wise men. Nevertheless, John wants us to be in no doubt about the identity of the baby whose birth we're celebrating this evening. When babies are born, it's always important to know where the baby comes from, who the baby is. And at the moment a baby's delivered in a hospital in the UK, a bracelet is quickly put onto the child's arm to identify who he or she is. For some reason, when I was born, my mother was very concerned that there might be a mix-up over my identity, and so she insisted I had a bracelet on each hand and foot. I don't know why, it must have made me look like a little pink Morris dancer. But the Apostle John is equally concerned that there be no doubt about the identity of this baby. And so he starts his gospel with these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. And then our verse climaxes with the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Jesus may have been born of Mary, but his origins lie in God. Jesus' existence didn't begin at his conception. In fact, there's never been a time when he didn't exist. It's an extraordinary thought, isn't it? The eternal God who made the universe has entered our world as a human being. He took on human flesh. And that is what we've been singing about this evening. In our first carol, we sang these words, "He came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all." And in our final carol, we shall sing, "God of God, light of light, very God, begotten, not created." The God who made you and me became like you and me, even to the extent of experiencing birth and childhood and adolescence. And it wasn't a short visit. He made his dwelling amongst us. If we were knocking around Israel at that time, we could have shaken his hand and spoken with him. But we weren't, and so we didn't. But John, who was a contemporary of Jesus and wrote this gospel, did. So elsewhere he writes these words, "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard and which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim." But although it wasn't a flying visit, it wasn't a permanent visit either. Because after living on earth for about 33 years, Jesus eventually returned to the Father from whence he came. So as we meet here this evening to celebrate his birth, Jesus Christ is reigning. We've got the Father in heaven. But why would God do something like that? Do you remember what the weather was like the Saturday before last? No. Well, if you're in the UK, it just rained constantly, didn't it? You woke up in the morning and it rained, and it continued raining the whole day. I was due to go for a run with somebody that morning. I took one look outside the window and rang my mate up and said, "Do you fancy going out?" He said, "No." And so we didn't. Why would we give up a warm house to run in the rain? Similarly, why would God go to such lengths to clothe himself with humanity? A bizarre thought, isn't it? Well, John tells us it was so that he might show us his glory. "We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only." People carry with them different ideas about God. Some people think there isn't a God, and that if there is, well, he can't be known. It's just one kind of great big mystery. Well, Jesus shows us that is not the case. God is not hiding. He's turned up on the scene. And Jesus did many things to prove his divine credentials. Others, because they've experienced great trauma and pain, or seen others experience great trauma and pain, think that God does not care. But as we see Jesus healing the sick and serving people and weeping at a graveside, we see that he does care. We have the evidence. Some people think God is a killjoy and that he will somehow limit or restrict their lives. But as we see Jesus turning water into wine and making people whole, we realize that he spoke the truth when he said, "I have come that people might have life and have it to the full." But by far the clearest and most definitive way that Jesus reveals God's glory is by his death on the cross. This is where God's wonderful character is seen in its brightest colors. In Jesus, the Almighty Creator God takes upon himself the punishment we deserve for the way we have treated him. And as Jesus dies on that cross, he satisfies God's justice and makes it possible for us to become God's friend. If you want to see God's glory, You see it as Jesus hangs on the cross. We see there that the God who created this universe is a God who is holy, just, perfect, but is nonetheless full of compassion, love, mercy. So the purpose of Christmas is not just to give us a jolly good excuse, and it's a great excuse, isn't it? To have family get-togethers and parties. No, the purpose of Christmas is so that God can make himself known to us. But there are different levels of knowing somebody. In the last 12 months, we have got to know a lot about Barack Obama. We know, for instance, that he's going to get a puppy for his two daughters. We even know that one of his daughters is allergic to dogs, and that limits the breeds that they can have. There have been countless, haven't there, interviews and reviews that mean we know a lot about this man, but we don't know him. In fact, I suspect there are very few people that really know him. I'm sure his wife Michelle does, and a few kids, and a few very close aides, and long-standing friends. But that's about it. But Jesus came not just to make God known, but to make him personally known. God's not just interested that we know what he's like. He wants us to know him personally, intimately. And you can't do that from a distance. I'm a bit of a Luddite. And so the internet has had limited impact on me. But for some people, a huge amount of their kind of friendships and social life is carried out through MSN and something called Facebook. Is that right? No, Facebook and internet chat rooms. Through the internet, people have even found their future partners and spouses. But of course, the internet can only get you so far. If you really want to develop a friendship, you have to spend time with them personally. And that is why people who've met over the internet, if they want to take things further, arrange to meet face to face. Well, God doesn't just want us to know him at a distance. He wants us to know him face to face. And so that might be possible, Jesus came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Jesus hasn't just made God known. He's made God knowable. But if we keep our distance from Jesus, well, then it's impossible to know God. We may know him as an idea, but we can't know him personally. We can't be in relationship with him. There can be no intimacy, no friendship. We can't know God as our loving Heavenly Father. We can know him as our Creator and our Judge, but that is a fearful prospect. So tonight, we celebrate how God has not only made himself known, but made himself knowable. Today, we can know the Creator of the universe and call him as our Heavenly Father. There'll be many of us here tonight who through Jesus have come to know God for themselves. You know what it is to be forgiven, to have that intimacy with the God who made you, to go through life in friendship with your Creator. Well, over this Christmas period, as you meet up and celebrate with family and friends, make sure that you delight in your relationship with God. You don't know him just as an idea. You know him as a personal being. His Spirit lives within you. Talk about him to others. Talk to him yourself in prayer. There's nothing more precious or more wonderful than to be in intimate relationship terms with the God who's made you. It's very special. Remember just quite how special that is. But there'll be others of us here, I suspect, this evening who don't know God personally. You may know him as an idea. You may even in some way have experienced something of his power. But you don't know him, and so you can't love him. Well, Jesus entered the world that first Christmas so that you can know him. He died on the cross so that you can know God's forgiveness. God longs for you to become his dearly loved child. But that can only happen through Jesus. So this Christmas, when you need a break from the TV and the mince pies, when you just need some time on your own, why not pick up a copy of John's Gospel and read it? We've got some available at the back of the church tonight. If you really will read it, please do take one as a freebie. And as you read it, ask God to reveal himself to you personally. Alternatively, or as well as, you might like to join our next Christianity Explore course, which begins in the new year. Again, you'll find details of it at the back of the church as you leave. This is a course which numbers of people have done now, and some have come to know God personally through it. And it's our desire to make it as accessible, as easy as possible. So we're running two courses, actually, in the new year. One on a Sunday morning at 11 o'clock in the Bear Pub, and another one on Monday mornings, which would be taking place in the same building where we're having the refreshments. You see, God is not hiding. It's a wonderful thought, that. Every one of us here can know him. He's not far from us. And every Christmas, we celebrate that fact. The God who made us longs for us to be in a loving relationship with him. And through Jesus, God has made that possible. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only who came from the Father, full of grace and truth.